You are listening to Craig Info Talk.
Hello and welcome to the final instalment of Crickinfo's Ashes Banter. I'm Andrew Miller, a UK editor of Crickinfo. And, well, what more is there to banter about? The Ashes, sadly, have been the Thrashes. 5-0 to Australia, their first whitewash in 86 years of Ashes contests. Well, joining me as ever is our Australian editor, Peter English. And, well, Peter, could there be any more fitting send-off for your three retiring players?
No, it was pretty comprehensive. Glenn McGrath, Shane Warne and Justin Langer, they all played a part on the final day, and there was an almost full SCG that seemed to cheer themselves hoarse as the celebrations went for at least 30 minutes. It was quite a tribute. Some of the English people were feeling a bit sick by it all, but as an Australian, it was very nice to watch. How did you feel?
Pretty sickened by it all, to be honest. But at the same time, watching McGrath and Warne leave the pitch together, those two in particular, obviously with respect to Justin Langer, those two legends of the game, and to see them leave the Test arena for the final time, yeah, brought an unexpected lump to most people's throats, I'm sure. Yeah, for England though, they can't wait to see the back of them, I think. Bearing in mind that McGrath was missing for the two matches that England won in 2005, it just goes to show just how much of a stranglehold those two have had over England for the past 16 years, really, taking Warne's entire career into account. But looking forward to the next contest, even though England have lost 5-0, 2009 should be half decent. What do you think?
I think it'll be fascinating. Australia have lost 4 senior players in this trip and a coach, so that's incredible change. As ridiculous as it sounds, England have lost 5-0, but probably won't make many changes. Australia have won 5-0, and you'll barely be able to recognise half the team next year. As the players went off, there were lots of tears, lots of hugs, lots of, you know, very emotional, sensitive new age men. So there might be a sledging opening for England in 2 years' time.
It'll have to be, because they lost every battle in the sledging departments on this tour. Collingwood lost a very high-profile one to Warne on the final day. And, well, Collingwood really epitomised England's series. They started with such hope, such expectation. And, well, Collingwood, a man who scored 329 runs in the first two tests, including a double century that really should have set up victory at Adelaide. And instead they lost that one, and after that he went missing for the rest of the series. I think he averaged 17 thereafter. So England had their chances, which is surprising to report in a 5-0 thrashing. You would imagine it would be the most one-sided thing imaginable, but there were moments in each test when England could just about have pulled themselves out of the mire.
Yeah, the Australians, they don't quite believe that, but what you're saying is definitely true. I mean, Ricky Ponting yesterday said that the turning point in the series was the first drinks break of the first day. I think that's being slightly unfair to England. Shane Warne was much more complimentary about them, saying that they'd fought in each test, and, well, they definitely fought in the first three tests. You know, Adelaide, they had a chance, Perth, they had a chance, and Melbourne, they had a chance, and then let it go through Simons and Hayden and were beaten in 3 days. And after that, they must have all felt like Steve Harmison were just desperate from home.
Well, Harmison, he was another man who never really came to the party. Andrew Flintoff was lamenting this yesterday, saying that really to compete in Australia against a team as good as this, you need to have 8 or 9 at least of your players on top form at all times. England at best had 3, I reckon, who were consistently good. There was Kevin Peterson, of course, who was head and shoulders above all the rest of their batsmen. Collingwood hung around but went missing a bit. Matthew Hoggard was impressive after a bit of a slow start at Brisbane. And Monty Panesar, of course, came into the reckoning late on, although he was a little stymied by some defensive field placings, I thought, in the last two tests. He took 8 wickets in the Perth game with 3 men around the bat all the time, and for some reason they all vanished after that, which I still can't fathom. But Australia, on the other hand, looking down the series averages, there really is absolutely no weak link at all.
No, that's right. I mean, when Australia did struggle, somebody always got them out. In Adelaide, they were 4 down and Giles dropped Ponting. He went on to get 100. Michael Clark got 100. In Perth, Australia were all out for 244 in the first innings. Michael Hussey made 74 not out of it in that innings, which I think was the best he played during the series, and he had a fantastic series. He averaged 90, you know, incredible. In Melbourne, it was Hayden and Simons who dug them out again. But the thing about the Australians is they didn't fail two innings in a row, whereas England's tail, if they got 50 runs, they would be happy. And then the top order, you know, followed. They couldn't maintain consistent standards, apart from Kevin Peterson, who was amazing. And also, he was tied down so much by the Australians. If anyone was suffocated during the series, it was Peterson. The way Australia bowled to him and the fields they set were just so restrictive. And the fourth day at the SCG, he made 29. It was worth at least 50 or 60. He hit balls hard to fielders. It was amazing to watch, but he just couldn't break through. Australia's fielding has been very impressive during the series, and their bowling, they've found their marks every time.
Well, just looking at their series averages here, not a single one of their seven batsmen, excluding Damien Martin, of course, who retired unexpectedly, but all the seven batsmen down to Gilchrist, and including Simons, made centuries. And all four of their senior bowlers took 20 wickets at least. Even Brett Lee, who had a bit of a torrid time in the first stages of the series, but then bounced back with four key wickets in Sydney and Melbourne.
6 wickets in each test. So, yeah, he finished very strongly. But, I mean, McGrath started the series well with 6 wickets in Brisbane. But Stuart Clark, he was just incredible. You know, each time he started to spell, he was right on the mark. He got wickets early. He put pressure on. Bounce, seam, swing. I mean, Australia were worried before the series about how to replace McGrath. Now, we can't expect Stuart Clarke to get 500 wickets, but, you know, I think he could get 200 and carry Australia for the next 5 years.
Well, England need someone like him to come through. Steve Harmison, sadly, looks as though he's a busted flush as far as international cricket goes. He's already retired from one-day cricket, and on the evidence he's shown in this tour, he wouldn't really be missed in the test arena. It was like waiting for Godot. Everyone assumed he was going to come out with this immense fiery spell. And ironically, he produced it on the final afternoon.
And Justin Langer was only slightly patronising when he said it's the best Harmison's bowled throughout the series. So he hit him a couple of times. I mean, England have been waiting for him to turn up since day one.
And alas, yeah, well, here we have it, 10 wickets at 61.4 for him. Nobody got more than Hoggard's 13, and that tally included 7 for 109 in that marathon innings at Adelaide. So it was a bit of a struggle for England to really make any impression on this series with the ball. And with the bats, well, Peterson and Collingwood had that big partnership at Adelaide. And apart from that, only Alistair Cook made triple figures, his valiant 116 at Perth. But at the same time, Cook is still only 22, turned 22 on Christmas Day. He will be 24 come the 2009 series, and he'll still be younger than any of the Australians currently are. So the future is English.
It is English, it is. I mean, they just have to recover from 5-0. I'm not sure how they do that. Definitely in the short term. I mean, 2.5 years, it's enough time for them to rebuild, but they probably need new ideas at the top. They need to have a stable captain. I mean, they've been very unfortunate with Vaughan and Simon Jones being out, but particularly with Vaughan. Flintoff has looked rudderless. He hasn't spoke well about what's happened. It's almost as though he's not sure what's happening. You know, it's almost as like they haven't talked about, you know, how their plans work, how their meetings work, where the game's gone wrong. It's been quite frustrating to hear him speak. But it's up to England which direction they pick next. But which way do you think they'll go?
Well, tomorrow morning it seems highly likely that Michael Vaughan will be unveiled as England one-day captain. Duncan Fletcher more or less admitted as much this afternoon that there was going to be a change, and Vaughan is back to some sort of fitness. He bowled 6 overs in a warm-up game at Bowral today. So he will be back. In the short term, it may mean that England will put up a bit more of a fight in the one-day arena, which is something that was the main contributor to their downfall in this series, given that their warm-ups all involved one-day cricket and the ICC Champions Trophy, which Australia went on to win, of course. England went on to lose as quickly as possible and went home for 10 days rest, which has come in for a lot of criticism, and rightly so, really. Resting up before an Ashes series is one thing, but not actually bothering to do any practice before an Ashes series is quite another.
It's quite strange to hear Flintoff say that he was well prepared for the first test. He was ready to play. I mean, he'd suffered the ankle injury, he'd had the operations, he'd done lots of fitness recovery, but he was short of bowling, he was short of batting. Maybe if it was a year ago, he would have been able to get away from Australia's tight plans and the bowling wide of off stump, but he was unable to do it. He was, you know, short of match fitness. And as soon as they admit that, then maybe they can move on for the next series. They've got the one-dayers now. That series goes for about 5 weeks. So, you know, perhaps they'll turn, perhaps they'll be ready for the World Cup. Australia have brought in some new players. you know, they'll continue to experiment. They'll continue to tinker. Matthew Hayden's back as an opener. They're waiting for Shane Watson to return to fitness to see if he'll be there. You know, they're basically finalising plans for their defence of the World Cup. So as far as England go, I'm not sure how much attention they're paying to the World Cup, you know, whether they can recover from this in time.
I very much doubt it is my not too optimistic prediction, but you never know. Come next summer, once the World Cup's out of the way, once they've got this hangover off, then they've got a test series against India to get stuck into, and then look forward to 2.5 years without having to worry about Australia, which is a bit of a bonus. It was all a bit unfair, really, winning in 2005 and then having to immediately get round to defending their title. It was clearly too much for them. But never mind, eh? It's been fun watching it in spite of the results. But this is Andrew Miller and Peter English signing off for Ashes Banter for Crick Info.
You are listening to Crick Info Talk.